The impact of technology is prompting businesses to rethink everything from marketing to customer service. But what does the business landscape of the future actually look like? Find out when we return to the Transformation Minute from Comcast Business.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, December 24th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal in New York. We're in the final days of 2019, but also the final days of the decade. So this week on Tech News Briefing, we're taking an opportunity to look back at some of the big tech that shaped the 2010s. Today, we're talking about streaming. Our Charlie Turner is talking with entertainment reporter John Jurgensen about the companies that have revolutionized the way we consume entertainment. We're talking Netflix, Amazon Prime, Spotify, and more. Coming up after the break.
Welcome back to the Transformation Minute from Comcast Business. How will the business landscape of the future look different from where we are today? We asked Denise Hasty, SVP of Comcast Business.
There's been a major paradigm shift across all industries. In banking, expect to see virtual financial experts for financial consulting and planning. They'll be communicating with their customers via video. At the same time, authentication will likely evolve to use biometrics. Passwords may actually become a thing of the past.
John, wasn't this past decade the streaming decade as far as listening to music and watching TV and movies were concerned?
Yeah, it was really a seismic change from the way things had always been done in the past. I mean, think about the way we listen to music. We went from owning music either in the form of CDs or digital downloads to renting it. You know, we didn't collect music anymore. Now we just kind of have these all-access passes to music, especially. And when things like that change, the way you pay for it, the way you use it, the way you access it, that really starts to change your relationship with it.
And didn't streaming revolutionize not just the way we listened and watched, but really how we experienced it? I mean, we had so many choices regarding TV shows and music. For one thing, there's a huge difference between waiting for a weekly show to arrive and binge watching.
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating about that is, as you said, you know, the schedule of television especially changed radically. We didn't need to wait for a weekly schedule or a time slot anymore, or even think about what kind of network you might find a TV show on. It became sort of part of this nonstop buffet that always gets replenished on the streaming services. But I think along with that comes this idea of, you know, it's not just a time slot. I think it's also an era that gets lost a little bit. You find people going back and watching shows from years ago because of a recommendation. Just because a show is brand new, a lot of people want to keep up on it. But you get kind of this erasure of time with the streaming ecosystem. So a show like The Office or The Wire or,
Or Friends.
You know, any number of classic, or Friends, for example, you know, one of the biggest hits in the streaming era, you know, it's as relevant and kind of urgent for people who are consuming it now as it ever was. It's much different than kind of the rerun phenomenon, which was a kind of past experience. Time has been kind of erased and compressed all at the same time by the streaming interface. So we're kind of living in all eras of television at one time.
What about music? You know, as far as, you know, these streaming services like Pandora or Spotify, Apple Music, there's just a 180-degree difference between renting and sampling and owning.
Yeah. I mean, think of the way we used to build music collections. I mean, it's easy for me to talk about this stuff because, and I assume many of our listeners live through an era of owning of owning music. So we have a comparison. But there used to be a very deliberate aspect of building a collection of music, whether you were, you know, selecting LPs and other vinyl records or CDs that you were, you know, putting into your towers and always trying to find a room for. It was very deliberate and this kind of this idea of picking a team almost, you know, this music collection that not only reflects like your past and your sort of emotional chapters, but just a thing that you owned and perhaps were proud of. Now that whole idea is somewhat, I don't know, thrown to the wind, really. And I mean, that's not that it's a bad thing necessarily, because what we've gained in exchange is complete and almost instant access to everything recorded. So what happens to us as music listeners in that respect, you know, when that floodgate is open completely and there's no obstacle to listening to anything you ever want to or desire. I think it's an amazing way of discovering because there's no barrier to entry. I mean, we'll try anything once because we're, you know, it's just washing over us. I think a lot of people, what they're starting to maybe express a concern or maybe a worry about it, that because there's no filter, there's no way to kind of put a dam up, you start to kind of lose a grip on the stuff that you tend to love. I mean, there's always those nostalgic hits that you're never going to forget. But more and more people talk about, you know, being in love with a song or an album 1 week and then maybe almost forgetting it the week or the month after. It's a pretty common phenomenon. So yes, we get everything and we probably get so much more discovery based on this system. But it's a strange way, you know, you almost have to make an effort to really kind of hold on to the stuff you discover and not, you know, like, not get let it get lost in the deluge.
Yeah, right. Related to that, didn't streaming, you know, with the sheer volume of the product available, take away the opportunity for music and video offerings to resonate emotionally with the consumer?
I think a lot of people would argue that that's not true. I mean, think about, I was just looking today at YouTube's list of the top, you know, streamed music videos of the decade. That song Despacito is the number one, the song that was released in the 2010s. And it had something like 6.6 billion streams to that song. And so the people who racked up those 6.6 billion streams, many of them by listening to that song over and over and over again, are going to feel passionate one way or the other about that song for the rest of their lives. Probably they're always going to remember that song because it probably defined a certain time in their lives. So there's no reduction, I don't think, in the emotional connection that we have with this stuff. I think what maybe a little frustrating is maybe they come fewer and farther between, or there's a greater amount of surface connections with some of these songs and shows because there's so many of them. So I don't know. I mean, your mileage may vary depending on what kind of consumer you are, because, you know, some people are just more passionate about this stuff than others. And some people are very diligent and vigilant about compiling playlists and tracking the stuff that they love and sharing playlists with other people, too. So it's really sort of a golden era of that, you know, for that kind of activity. But I think for casual consumers of this stuff, it's really easy to feel like you're kind of lost in the flow. One other thing I'm really curious about, and I asked a lot of people I talked to for this piece the same question, and I think we were sort of talking around that idea of, you know, do the songs, do the TV shows that we love, are they any less sticky now? In terms of our emotions and our memory, are they any less sticky now just because there's so much stuff competing with them? I mean, do we have as strong attachments with the entertainment that we love because of that fact? And I think it'll be really interesting to almost do kind of a longitudinal study of young people who grow up with, you know, just in a completely streaming universe to find out if, you know, what are their favorite songs of the recent decades, you know, as they get into their 20s and 30s? Well, what are the songs and TV shows that they're going to remember? And are they, is there kind of a collective memory for a lot of this stuff that's shared among a lot of people? Because that's one thing that the streaming world has done is made the niche completely popular too. So there's a niche for everything. And so what are the collective memories going to be?
Wall Street Journal reporter John Jurgensen. Thanks a lot, John.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from the Wall Street Journal. Quick note, we won't be on the air tomorrow, but we'll be back on Thursday. From all of us at the Wall Street Journal, happy holidays and thanks for listening.